With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. You're listening to Germ Warfare with Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Germ Warfare at tntradio.live. That's my email address, as always. Thank you. Thank you to those who send me emails. And a special thank you to those who tell me where in the world they are emailing me from. I thoroughly enjoy that. I don't know why I love that so much. I just like knowing that there are people all over who listen to my show. I've really, really got a wide audience, from people listening in Russia to people in Bermuda to obviously Canada and the US, even in parts of southern Latin America. I don't care too much about people on your side of the world, Alex. I know I've got listeners in Australia, but you know, nobody cares about Australians, and less so about New Zealanders. No, I'm kidding. Australians are cool. But the term New Zealander, is that what you call somebody from New Zealand? Do you say New Zealander? Not. What is it? A Kiwi. Is that what you call somebody from New Zealand? They're called Kiwis. Okay. All right. Okay. And then jump into the live chat. It's on TNT's website. All right. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
Bringing you a world view.
I like to hear what's going on around the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Simon Roche, did you know that somebody from New Zealand is called a Kiwi and not a New Zealander?
Really? I didn't know that. That sounds a little bit informal. That sounds a bit slangy to me.
Well, that's what Alex says. I always thought it was a New Zealander. Somebody from Hong Kong, what are they called? A Hong Konger. Hong Konger longer. I've got no idea.
I don't know.
If you're from Singapore, you're Singaporean, but Hong Kong gets me every single time, and I suppose New Zealand also got me. How are you, Simon?
I've been better. As you know, I've struggled with wireless internet this afternoon, so I've frantically made a plan. I'm sitting at my friend's guest house using the guest house wireless, and I've got a Belgian Malinois. And you know, Jeremy, let me just give a piece of advice here. As everybody knows, I'm a wise man, but this is right out of the top drawer. If this is the most sagacious advice that anybody's ever going to get from me, unless you really know what you're doing, don't get a Malinois. Get a Jack Russell, Jack Russell, before you get a Malinois. Jeez, they are a handful. That dog has worn me thin today. So yeah, I'm pulling my hair out. But otherwise, I'm alive and kicking, and I'm very pleased to be on your show, Jeremy.
I'm pleased to have you. I love chatting to you, Simon. You're a wealth of information. And
no, I don't know.
I suppose opinion as well.
All of my opinions are soundly grounded in facts, Jeremy.
That's what everybody says.
Yeah, it is what everybody says, but I made up my mind when I was young, for whatever reason, because I'm, I don't know, but odd, that I was going to do whatever it took to strive for the real truth, even if it didn't suit me. And I don't say I've gotten it right, but I do say that I endeavor well enough to be slightly conceited about it from time to time.
Mm. Okay, Simon, let's do the usual boring stuff for those who don't know who you are. Quick bio.
Jeremy, I am a white South African male of 52 years old. I was born in 1972 on the upper south coast of Natal. For anybody who knows where that is, it was, as we used to say, braai vleis, which is barbecue, sunny skies, and Chevrolet. It was a beautiful place to grow up in the 70s and the 80s. It was a very privileged existence, even for lower middle class people like my family. And I was a child of the sea. My dad was a very famous fisherman, and he had a world record and a separate South African record. One of my brothers has gone on to be three times European spearfishing champion. That was my milieu. And I ended up in an industry, what's known as special projects. It's basically live events, but kind of one-off ones, more grand ones. Let's say the opening ceremony of a World Cup. That would be called, as opposed to a bar mitzvah, a special project as opposed to a live event. So I was in that game for a long, long time, and I had a hang of a lot to do with the African National Congress. The reality is that in South Africa, if you're the best of road builders, you're going to be contracted by local municipalities or provinces or the national government to build roads. And likewise, in South Africa, if you are at the top of the game in special projects, you're going to be your chief client is going to be the African National Congress government, the state, for things like opening of parliament and presidential inaugurations and national days, and to the extent that they are involved in things like World Cups. And so I was in that world for a long time. And towards the end, I was very heavily involved in stealing money. And I was in a very, very, very vulnerable position. And I didn't have the luxury of being able to say, bugger you. You know, I'm holier than thou. I refuse to have anything to do with this terrible business. I kind of was stuck. And not kind of, I was stuck. I was well and truly stuck. And it became an enormous crisis of conscience for me. And I would go and see my pastor and, you know, cry on his shoulder. And he'd come to my house after church on Sundays and sit with me. And, you know, I'd go meet him on Tuesday nights. And so it went on for a couple of years. And I continually prayed about being released from that circumstance, because it's rotten. The African National Congress is far more rotten than any media outlets in South Africa know. And I had for a long time had a great interest in Saiklanders, this organization for which I now work and represent. I'm the spokesman / the foreign affairs dude. And
Hold on, it's Afrikaans for Southlanders, but it doesn't translate well.
Yeah. The best translation, although it's inaccurate, is Southerners. Exactly the way you say. The literal translation is not the best one, as it were. And one thing led to another. There was a bit of a breakthrough. I was desperate to get out of my situation. I was willing to do anything. I was willing to jump out of a frying pan into a fire or into a lake, as we used to say as kids. And I went to the USA representing this organization because I met a man who, strange as it may seem to your listeners, said that he'd had a dream about me, but he didn't know who I was. And when he saw me for the first time, he said, "You're the man from my dream." No. He said, I hear you want to go overseas. Well, I'd never seen your face. I'd heard through the rumor mill. I'll give you the money. He was busy going bankrupt due to drought. He was he has an enormous farm in the epicenter of what might be described as the center of the global mohair production market. That is to say, goat mohair, not the rabbit mohair. And there was a 10-year drought in that region. He lost everything, and with almost his very last money before going bankrupt, he sponsored this tour overseas. I toured the USA for 6 months. And talking to people about South Africa and about farm murders and what have you, and I came back and Saitlander said to me, "Well, you know, you've done a moderately good job in the USA. We'd like you to be on our payroll. We can't really afford to pay you at the moment, but let's see what we can figure out." And one thing has led to the next, and it's now about 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. It's 6 full years later, 6 years and 2 months later, since I flew to the USA, and yeah, the rest of the story that brings me to your show today.
Well, yes, what's interesting. So the Saitlanders gets a very bad rap in many quarters, and for all the wrong reasons, obviously. Let's just clarify that for a second. It's an exit strategy group in the event, and hopefully this event will never happen, but it exists in the event that there's civil unrest. And those who understand South African politics will very much appreciate why a group like this exists.
Yeah, we're kind of redundant, Jeremy, in the sense that if there's never a civil war or nationwide anarchy or something along similar lines in this country, we will never have served much purpose. But there are many, many people in South Africa who are dreadfully afraid of the way things are going. And we are constituted under the specific provisions of the protocols additional to the Geneva Conventions, which permit identifiable ethnic groups to prepare in anticipation of a threat upon them. And so it is that I and others, under the leadership of our founder, Mr. Gustav Müller, believe that the trajectory of South Africa, if you take it from, let's say, 1985 to 1990 to 1995, 2000, and so on, it's not unreasonable to suggest that there is a very distinct, I'm struggling to think of the right word, but a predictable trajectory, that there's an arc that you can discern quite empirically, and you can therefore extrapolate that arc. And the likelihood of South Africa descending into chaos, which, given the demographics of South Africa, this is almost impossible to convey to anybody other than somebody living in Rwanda or Yugoslavia. So I don't expect your listeners to understand that. But given the demographics of South Africa, if there should be a severe social crisis in this country, it shall inevitably fracture or rupture along ethnic and racial lines. That is not a possibility or a probability. Well, if you love Jesus more, or if you hold hands more tightly, or if you kiss with your mouth open, maybe you can avoid that. It's simply nonsensical. If there is a genuine crisis in this country, a proper severe crisis, it will inevitably and ineluctably rupture subsequently along racial lines. So what we say is, you can imagine how politically incorrect we are and how heavily infiltrated.
And I love it.
By the state security agency and by the police crime intelligence. And I think to some extent by military intelligence, but to a much lesser extent. You can imagine for yourself that if we had ever done anything illegal in our history of two decades, by now somebody would be in jail. So I can say with hand on heart, using my enemy as my reference, that we don't do stupid, nasty, racist, horrible, ugly, yucky things. All we do is moderately, boringly prepare for a crisis with legal, lawful firearms and baked beans and radio tests and fake evacuation exercises and things like that. You know, when journalists come out to South Africa, you may remember that there was a time when many, many, many came out on my invitation. There was a time where I conducted a sort of a program of inviting people from all over the world. And we had the BBC, CNN, Russia Today. I'm talking about people who sent teams here, the Times of London, Die Welt, another German channel, a German TV group of 56, if I recall correctly, channels. We had the best of the best out here. And you can tell after a day or two that they become a bit disappointed. We really are prosaic. We are prosaic, Jeremy. We're boring people, man. We do rudimentary things like stash baked beans and figure out what's the safest route out of town if, you know, everything goes to pot. We're not as spectacular and interesting as people would love to believe that we are in a sinister manner.
What was quite funny there, I don't know if you realize, but you spoke about baked beans and pot in the same sentence. Well, I like how you're keeping quiet on that one-liner. But Simon, look, I think the reason why the St. Lunders gets a bad rap, and you know where I'm going with this, it's essentially a group that's for white people only. Now, it's okay to say that, and it's protected under the Geneva Convention, and I've got the 66-page document in front of me. This has nothing to do with racial hatred. It has everything to do with preservation. it doesn't mean you hate anybody. That's simply the fact of the matter.
Yeah, it's a bit like Orania, Jeremy. You know, there's that famous town, Orania. It's about 45 kilometers west of me. If I go out of my driveway and drive to Orania, I literally only use one road from my very driveway to the epicenter of Orania. So I know it well. And Orania is not, if you go there, it's not pus-filled. It's not a suppurating wound of people filled with hatred for other races. It's just Afrikaners who want to speak their language on their terms and get on with their own business and achieve the best that they can. And for anybody who's never been there, it's well worth visiting, because the stark contrast between Orania and all of the towns around Orania and all of the towns, you know, through the length and the breadth, the full extent of South Africa, there's maybe one exception that I can think of, is marked. Orania is going forward at a pace of, let's say, I don't know, make up a number, 100 kilometers an hour. Whereas the rest of South Africa is going backwards Whereas the rest of South Africa is going backwards at 30 kilometers an hour, and it has a big head start. You cannot find a town in South Africa with clean streets. There just isn't one. You cannot find a town Africa that has a nil crime rate. You know, there's nothing in South Africa that compares to the best towns in New Zealand and Australia and Canada and Europe and so on. You know, Orania is a little gem that's doing brilliantly well. I could give another 100 examples of, you know, the stark contrast. Likewise, we're not obsessed by hating black people. We get a bad rap because we are counter the Overton window, and we're counter the zeitgeist. The notion that anybody should be ethno-nationalist in anything that they do, in any sphere of endeavor, is anathema. Now, of course, it has never been anathema. You can go back as far as you like through your forebears and your forefathers and recognize very easily that people have always been ethno-nationalistic or linguistic in their patriotism or affiliation. It has always been a human characteristic. It just is. It's one of those things. And as you and I discussed it's even proven scientifically, and I don't mean in some kind of racial DNA, I hate black people kind of way, but just in what we seek out in sexual partners. We seek our mothers and our fathers. We seek the same symmetry of face. We seek the same chief characteristics. This is scientifically proven in, I mean, it's just been, you know, I've read at least four, and I don't have a specific interest in that field. So we incline towards nationalistic behavior. The only reason why the world isn't doing so now, of course, is because it's being foisted upon people. People have been told any spontaneous, sudden, anti-nationalistic eruption in the classical West, that is to say New Zealand, Australia, Canada, the USA, and Western and Central Europe. At any point in time, at no point in time did the Trumpet newspaper or the Mercury or the Daily News report, in Australia recently, the people stormed down the street of Darwin demanding that everybody else should become, you know, anti-nationalist. It was a thing that was imposed, we've all seen this, by our academia and our elites and the most politically correct classes and, besides politically correct, the political classes. This was something we were told to think, that we must think this way. And many people have adopted it, and of course there's some people who've rejected it. Just for simple reasons. My reasons are not sophisticated.
All right, Simon, I have to quickly go to a break. We're going to chat about multiculturalism and immigration in a few minutes. My name is Jim. I'm chatting to Simon Rush. This is TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Hervé Morich.
But there's a trend I've noticed now. Do you recall a little while back there was the Western mainstream media talking about young girls in Iran mysteriously being poisoned en masse? And then someone sends me an article about how in Mexico young girls are being poisoned en masse. And then I read New York Times today says Afghanistan, 90 Afghan schoolgirls were poisoned. This is really strange. My immediate thought is, I mean, look at the countries. They're all countries the U.S. wants the regime change. Iran, Mexico because of AMLO, and Afghanistan. Maybe they weren't. The U.S. Regime was not happy. Is not happy with the current Afghan regime probably still. So I don't know. It's just really weird. There's a trend here. How is it that mysteriously multiple countries now? It's not even clear what's happening if these girls were really poisoned or not. So that is supremely weird.
Hrvoje Morich on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
1 in 4 people in Northern Ireland will be affected by depression in their lifetime. In fact, Northern Ireland has the highest rate of depression in the UK. Despite this, there's still a stigma attached to talking about it and mental illness in general. At Aware, we're trying to change that. Our story began in 1996 in Derry, Londonderry, when a small group of people came together with a shared vision to improve services for people with depression and bipolar disorder. This meeting led to the establishment of 25 peer-led support groups and the start of Aware, the depression charity for Northern Ireland. Providing support is at the heart of what we do, and we involve people with personal experience of depression at every level in the organisation, so that those who use our services have a say in how they're developed. We believe that talking to others who know how you feel is an important step in your journey to recovery. We've developed a range of education programmes, which we deliver in schools, universities, community venues, prisons, hospitals, and workplaces. These programmes provide attendees with the tools to look after their mental and emotional well-being and help them to recognise the signs of mental ill health and know where to get help. We have a range of online services, including online support groups and programmes, and an interactive website offering support and information. We've been raising the profile of mental health and increasing public awareness about depression through our public talks and outreach events. We work in partnership with local government and voluntary organisations to maximise our impact. Back when we founded Aware, depression was an illness talked about in whispers. A lot has changed since then, and we're having a real impact by breaking down the stigma. But we still have work to do. Aware's vision is a future where nobody is too ashamed to talk about their mental health. And we believe that everyone in Northern Ireland should have access to services appropriate to their needs. Join us. Donate, volunteer, campaign, or even just start a conversation about mental health today. Together, we can overcome depression and change lives.
Visit aware-ni.org. A message brought to you by TNT Radio.
Today's News Talk Radio.
Now we're talking.
TNT.
Simon, an obvious, what's the word I'm looking for? An obvious vector to unrest or to racial conflict is multiculturalism. Now, right off the bat, I'm not opposed to multiculturalism, considering that if it's voluntary or if it's organic, but when it's imposed or forced or legislated, it leads to very, very, very severe and dire problems. And we've seen this historically, and South Africa is no different. Multiculturalism leads to all kinds of conflict if it's not organic, if it's forced, imposed, or legislated. We've seen this throughout the world, and yet we still see the establishment narrative of trying to put people who are entirely different across all spectrums into the same environment, and obviously it's going to lead to problems. We can see in a game park how animals keep to their own, right?
You know, the problem, Jeremy, is it's the failure of right wingers, and I say right wingers in the sense of the original sense. So during the French Revolution, the French Parliament was like any parliament. You see a movie about the British Parliament, half of the guys on one side, half of the guys on the other. Those who sat on the right wing of the French Parliament were the monarchists. They were the religious. They were the blah, 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 blah. On the left-hand side were the revolutionaries and the Freemasons and others who proudly said, we want to sit this side. This is what we are. You know, this, it's not that I'm exposing anything interesting. So in that sense, right-wingers have been contaminated by false narratives that have formed the bedrock of their intellect. And the prime example is love thy neighbor. You know that on the cross, Christ said, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. The original translation, and this is easily demonstrable, not at your local church. That idiot doesn't know what he's talking about. I'm saying if you do a proper job of it, that he said, forgive them not, for they know what they do. Similarly, the parable of the Samaritan was not meant to demonstrate that all men are your neighbor. It was meant to demonstrate that if four men walk past and one stops to help, which one do you think was the dude's neighbor? So brotherhood and affiliation are evinced in action. But we know the opposite. So what we know is the facts and the science and all the research and the DNA and the IQ test and the this and the that. But then somebody in a newspaper says, don't be nasty. And we right-wingers immediately think, oh, yeah, golly gee, no, that's right, isn't it? Oh, I should be slow to judgment. Yeah, I should be slow to judgment. Even though the matter is empirically demonstrable and observable, it goes to the idiom in the south of the USA, which is clearly tongue-in-cheek, it's clearly ironic, it's clearly facetious, that goes, who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? And Southerners in the USA say that that is how the Northeast, the uber intellectuals of the USA, talk to the South. They observe a thing. They observe whether things are getting hotter or colder. They observe whether the crops are dying or not dying. They observe whether there's an increase in whatever, you know, if there's a certain poison, whatever. And the media tell them, what are you going to believe, your own eyes, or are you going to believe me? The sainted Wall Street Journal. And so, like mentally retarded mongoloid babies, the right wing has a tendency to overlook hard reality as though there might be something else worth considering. And which brings me to the point. I'm sorry, but that was a very long-winded introduction, but hopefully it will provide a very strong foundation to the point that I'm about to make. The elites of the world are not trying to make cultures work. It is a premeditated exercise in creating a cultural bomb. It's not an accident. It's not a social experiment. It's not nothing that the right-wingers are told. You have, I mean, for goodness sake, you know, it's a bit like the war in Ukraine, Jeremy. Victoria Nuland lost 3 of her 4 grandparents in Kiev. Anthony Blinken, we refer now to the 2 chief drivers of the Ukraine conflict. Anthony Blinken lost almost his whole family. And if you've ever seen the video of the rabbi explaining patiently in a very nice, eloquent, and measured manner why it is that the Talmudists chose the Ukraine to be the locus of the final war of destruction of the world. He explains it's because of our experience in Ukraine. And, you know, after much conversation, we decided that when we drag the world to Tikkun Olam, which is the perfect destruction of the entire world, we would start it in Ukraine. It's a simple explanation. You don't have to tie yourself up in knots about it. This is him speaking to a class of yeshiva students. And similarly, these social experiments are not, they're not as cack-handed as right-wingers believe that they are. Golly gee, can't they see what they're doing wrong? Don't they get it, man? And you want, Jeremy, Are you on the WhatsApp group, Jeremy? Did you see that there's been a 700% rise in rapes of Swedish girls by Afghani immigrants over the past 9 months? Can you believe that? You mentally retarded twit. Sooner or later, you must, if you've got a mind of your own, begin to recognize that this cannot be an accident. As I said to somebody recently, in your life, in your experience of apples, shoelaces, clouds, school fees, women, haircuts, and Ford motor vehicles, have you ever come across the level of coincidence that you are expected to credit to that are happening in the world?
Obviously, Simon, it's coincidental.
I don't hate right-wingers. I don't hate right-wingers. I love them, but geez, they're a stupid lot. Jeremy, dumb. A right-winger is a dumb thing, boy.
You know, it's funny you say that. I've got a book by one of the greatest journalists who no longer is with us, Andrew Breitbart. And the book is called Righteous Indignation. And I think he published it in 2012, 2011, thereabouts. And in it, he critiques very harshly the right wing, the right wingers of the West, saying that they've basically lost their balls and there needs to be a return to the Tea Party, principled right wingers. And I think that's pretty much what you've just echoed.
Yeah, well, Jeremy, it's reminiscent of the John Wayne bravura of the USA, you know, land of the home of the free and the brave and the toughest and the best, and nobody can beat us and we'll knock you in your jaw. But when it was apparent that Donald Trump had lost the election falsely, that he'd been cheated, when all of the videos had come out, when the tallies had been done, when the maths didn't work, when Joe Biden had received almost double the number of votes of the people living, man, woman, and child, in certain counties and so on, what did they do? They took up their axes. They rose up as one man, as true Americans, smoking Winstons and taking no nonsense from anybody. No, they didn't. They got in their Ford Camaros and they drove around the Capitol with flags hanging out the car, hooting their hooters. Homos, Jeremy. Homos to a man, the entire nation. Homos to a man, the entire nation. The election was stolen.
Yeah.
Blatantly. And I talked about this, Jeremy. I spoke about this far and wide on every channel possible from the previous August when the Transition Integrity Project story came out. And prior to that, in July, when the hammer and the scorecard were exposed, completely exposed, we knew the instruments that they were going to use and how they were going to use them. Lo and behold, they used them. What do the guys do? Beep. I'm so unhappy. I'm going to honk my horn and make you feel sad.
You know, I don't know if you read that book by Douglas Murray, The Strange Death of Europe. And in it, he speaks about the immigration problem and how Europe is pretty much dead unless they can somehow reverse what's going on. I mean, that same thing is happening to the USA.
It can't be reversed, Jeremy. It has passed the point of no return. And this is something that Europeans and Americans fail to recognize. You, as a South African, actually, I shouldn't include you because you're too young to have really apprehended, no matter how mature you were, too young to have apprehended the events of the mid to late 80s and early 90s. Nobody has such a good formation that they can be on top of such nuanced developments. But our fate, signed, sealed, and delivered by about 1988. It just had to be, the envelope just had to be opened and read to the audience. There was no going back. And there's no going back in the USA. The chances of rescinding or revoking the tremendous demographic crisis, the sellout, if I may put it that way, not to put too fine a point in it, of the Republican party and the beguiling of Republicans cannot be rectified. It can't be corrected. You know, I'll give you the ideal example. I know I'm going to upset just about every single last person on your show now, but people talk about Donald Trump as if he's some sort of saint.
He's not.
Donald Trump, in the months of October, let's say August, September, October, November, December, roughly that period of, oh, heavens above, Simon, I can't think straight. When did the interbank repurchase agreement collapse? Was it 2019? Kept on saying the same thing. We have the finest economy in the world. Now, that was over a period during which, notwithstanding COVID, thank you, Professor, thank you, but notwithstanding COVID, you see, I can hear your audience members screaming back at me down the line. Notwithstanding COVID, Trump borrowed the equivalent in money in debt for the USA of 40% of all of the debt that had been aggregated over 200 years. It's a bit like going to the bank and getting yourself into tremendous debt and coming home and telling your wife, look, my darling, we're rich. And while that was being done, the overnight interbank repurchase agreement system collapsed on, if my memory would only serve me, I think Tuesday, the 16th of November. When the overnight interbank repurchase agreement rate went from 1.65% to 9.65% in one night. In other words, here was this man who knew full well that the only reason why they were high on the hog, that's to say the United States of America, and why he could lie to the entire country that they were doing well, was because he borrowed 40% on top of, so 40% on top of all that had ever been borrowed in the history of the United States of America. It is arguably the greatest bullshit story in all of the history of all of mankind. I defy you to come up with a better one. And yet it still didn't work. The banks said to one another in one night, screw you, I know the truth. I know that you're utterly bankrupt. If you're going to borrow money from me for just 24 hours, you're going to pay me, it's an annualized rate, obviously, it's not 10% overnight. You're going to pay me 9.65%, although yesterday it was 1.35 or 1.65 the previous day, which is what had always been. It was a very consistent rate since its introduction following the work of the Hungarian savant. I'll think of his name in a second. So that's the world we live in, where even the best of people believe the greatest nonsense, the greatest fictions. Mm. And people are talking about Trump if he'd only come back. And what people don't understand is that you never, ever send a pedophile. I speak as somebody who was brought up a Roman Catholic, so nobody should be offended by this. A pedophile Roman Catholic priest to play a trick on a Presbyterian congregation. You send a Presbyterian with a broad Scots accent. And, and sadly, we live in this world where people are agog. Trump might come back. Have you heard? Did you hear the radio? Did you hear the radio? Trump, he announced he's coming. This is the man who told you that you were rich because he borrowed $8 trillion to make you feel rich at a time when borrowing $8 trillion was not even enough to keep the overnight interbank repurchase agreement system alive. To the extent that to this day, tonight, in the United States of America, the Federal Reserve banking system, the 12 banks owned by the four European families, four European families and the four American families. Those 12 banks will lend into the overnight interbank repurchase agreement system about $53 billion because the banks refused to loan to one another even overnight. And that has been going on since the 16th of November, 2019. You know,
Simon,
that's the case in.
I just want to jump in there quickly. I have to go to a break, but we can continue in a moment, if you don't mind. My name is Jerm. I'm chatting to Simon Roche. This is TNT Radio.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
The shocking images of Manhattan skyscrapers enveloped in a sickly orange smog are just the tip of the iceberg of the impact that the Canadian forest fires are having on the northeastern United States. When I saw those images, I checked the air quality index for New York. It was 157, not good by any stretch of the imagination. But some perspective is in order. Our AQI here in central New York was 334, more than twice as bad as the city. But just as New Yorkers shouldn't fall victim to location bias, meaning that conditions in your area are worse than everywhere else, we in 2023 shouldn't fall victim to temporal bias, thinking that this is the worst it's ever been. That most assuredly isn't true. Go back and look at May 19th, 1780, a day that is still referred to as New England's Dark Day. We have no way of measuring what the air quality index was that day, but we do know that from Portland, Maine, down into New Jersey, it was so dark in midday that people had to light candles in their homes just to do their chores. What is believed to have caused that dark day? That's right, Canadian forest fires. This too shall pass. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Suck it up.
It's not a big deal.
Snap out of it.
Just get over it.
We've all heard it. But if you're experiencing extreme stress, it's not just in your head. It can affect your entire body because toxic stress can hurt us physically without us even knowing it. If you've lost a job, worry about your next meal, or have trouble making it through the day, if you're feeling the effects of stress, we can help. Text STRESS to 211-211 to find a solution.
Germ warfare is Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, into the final lap, Simon. Sorry, I interrupted you very rudely there, but this is live radio and it's one of those things.
Yeah, it's all right, Jeremy. Don't worry about a thing. I understand, of course.
So you were talking about Trump, and I agree with you, and it, I thought you were going to mention warp speed and you didn't, and I was supremely disappointed at that whole saga. That, for me, sealed the deal that he really was either knowingly leading people down the wrong path or he was just hoodwinked. I don't know what the truth is due to the fact that he's so blockheaded and arrogant. I want to think that he was hoodwinked.
Yeah, I'm pleased for you, Jeremy. You're cute. But you're like a little blonde-haired girl with blue eyes wearing a little smart dress running through a field of poppies.
I don't even have a comeback. That was just like a total takedown of Germ.
No, Alex, Jeremy, you've got to turn that into
Alex, hold on. Simon, I want Alex to turn that into a little sound clip because it was so good.
No, look, I'm going to say this not for your benefit. I don't need to clap you on the back. That's between you and me. But for the sake of your audience, I know you well enough to know that you are very, 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 very much on point with this stuff and better read than I am. So it's easy for me to mock you because the moment presented itself. But I know that you are maybe erring on the side of optimism in Ray Donald Trump. But by and large, you can conduct a better argument on this subject of the beguiling of the West by the puppets of the Talmud.
Yeah.
Probably anybody I know except for one guy in Gallatin, Tennessee.
It's interesting, though, because all of this could simply be avoided if people were, A, I suppose, aware, and B, were able to do something, don't you think?
Yeah, no, Jeremy, I don't think so. I think it's beyond the point of you know, if we did this, then maybe perhaps we could. You know, Jeremy, if I caught you, if you said to me, gee, I've had enough of, let me think of an example that's not about, some guy across the road. I've had enough of this guy. I'm going to kill him. Watch me, Simon. You don't know me. Boy, I don't take nonsense from anybody. I'm going to murder that guy. And lo and behold, I then caught you with a murder weapon standing over his body, and the matter went to court. Now, I was produced as a witness. The chances of you getting off that charge are just about nil. However, we're expected to believe that a book written 2,000 years ago that speaks in detail of the rape of young Christian girls and of the destruction of all of Christianity, whose message, whose word has been manifested over time, that its adherents are in fact innocent. So there's a book describing the murder I'm going to do in my handwriting. You catch me doing that murder, I say I'm innocent, you say, yeah, probably. It's probably false. We're probably judging you too harshly. And so, and we're beyond the point of recovering that, Jeremy. We're beyond the point of evicting the migrants from Europe. And you know that multicultural societies don't work for whatsoever reason. You know, this episode, this interview by you today now has been controversial enough that I'm not going to get into the very solid reasons why multiculturalism doesn't work. But you, having witnessed it for yourself, apprehend it. You grasp it, you know, and that cannot be recovered. Europe is not going to be flipping repaired. It doesn't work that way. Doesn't, you know, it's a bit like this. Whoa, Jeremy, this is a favorite. Right-wingers, conservatives saying, and would you believe it? The West's stockpiles have been deleted. I mean, depleted. The West, can you see that? See, we've got no more shells left. Can you imagine? Yes, that was the plan. Was to simultaneously drag Russia and Ukraine to war while conducting the assisted suicide of the West, so that when this matter is accelerated, Russia and the West can fight one another to the death. It's not an accident, man, that you don't have any Javelin missiles left, you bristle. Another thing that's not accidental, and it's not just one of those things, is Khmelnytsky. On the night of the, you can't say the Russians don't have a sense of humor. On the night of the Saturday, the 13th of May, they struck two primary targets, the Russians did, with Kinzhal's. The one was the hometown of the Ukrainian entrance in the Eurovision Song Contest. While they were strumming their guitar.
I saw it.
The other was the arsenal of the, oh dear me, I hope, 120 millimeter Challenger 2 depleted uranium shells stored in Khmelnytsky. If you saw, which you would have, I mean, you don't miss a trick. The plume, the cloud, the most telling thing about that cloud from that explosion was the blocks of flats in the foreground. So being perspective being what it is, those blocks of flats looked bigger relatively than they were naturally, because they're in the foreground, not in the, you know, background. And they were what, 1/30th the size of that plume of smoke, a plume of smoke that mankind hasn't seen since the Tsar bomber test in Siberia by the Russians 65 years ago. Now, depleted uranium is naturally occurring uranium with the fissile quality reduced, attenuated. normal uranium, naturally occurring uranium, such as we get so very much of here near to where I live, contains a fissile percentage of about 0.77. Depleted uranium is depleted down to 0.3. And the idea is that it's safe. But we know from southern Iraq, we know from the extensive scientific data provided by the chief medical officer of the World Health Organization in southern Iraq, as reported in The Lancet and the New England Journal of Medicine and Nature and you name it, that after the use of depleted uranium shells with a fissile content of 0.3% in southern Iraq, the incidence of neuroblastomas, that is to say cancer of the kidney or a certain particular cancer of the top of the kidney in children, is 48% consistently year in and year out from 2001 until now, 2002, 2003, until now, now. And the last I heard from him was about a year and a half ago, I suppose. And he said that all of the evidence suggests that it will continue at that rate, 48%, year in and year out, in newborn children or children picking it up in infancy, for many decades to come. So my point is not to thank the United States of America for causing that much cancer. It's how they roll. It's what they do. That's fine. My point is that there is now the same thing in far greater quantity wafting across Eastern and Central Europe since the 13th of May. We will now see incidents of cancer in children. I'm talking neuroblastomas. Only of neuroblastomas in children, excluding all the adult cancers and the other children's cancers, of 48%, assuming that the genetics are equally responsive, which they may not be, for decades and decades and decades to come. Eastern and Central Europe is now utterly poisoned to the marrow of their bones. And I bring this up maybe at a tangent in some people's ears, but to me, it's core to everything that we discussed about multiculturalism and what have you. It is the enormous crisis that is pulling us, whose severity we don't recognize. It's already happened. We're going to put the fissile uranium back those Challenger 2 tank shells. You can't, just as you can't put the genie of multiculturalism in the bottle in Europe, and you can't the deprivations and the ravages of the U.S. social system of the past 50 years. It can't be done. It must now be played out to its logical conclusion.
All right, Simon, I wish I could talk longer, but time is now very much against us. I can't really give you more than 30 seconds or more, so quickly tell me how I can follow you or keep up to date with you and St. Lunders.
You can follow me on YouTube. Just search Simon Roche on YouTube or do a general search on the internet. I've done well over 400 interviews in the past few years. So there's a lot of that stuff. Or you can go to our English language website, saitlunders.org. There's no www, whatever, just Saitlunders, S-U-I-D, saitlunders.org. Press enter to go into the homepage, scroll to the bottom, and you can support us. We desperately need the financial help. Nobody is coming out fighting the way that we are, coming out swinging the way that St. Lunders is, coming up standing for your cause. Please help us. We need the help desperately, financially. And we say thank you in advance. Anybody can send me an email, simon@saitlunders.org. I'd be very pleased to chat with you, as long as it's not trivial, with all due respect. I just get too much correspondence, but serious conversations I'd love to hold. Thank you, and God bless you for what you do, Jeremy, for this opportunity for Saitlund.
Simon, since you just said now nothing trivial, I'm now no longer going to send you WhatsApps.
Don't talk rubbish, Jeremy. Yours are very much appreciated. You keep me on the cusp. I have built entire mansions on the foundations that you've laid in my mind.
All right. Simon Roche, thank you for joining me in the trenches. It's always a pleasure. I'll have you back soon. I'll have you back soon with the greatest of pleasure. Hope you enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you, Alex, for having a tough time with the EQing today. Simon is quite a passionate guy, and he sends that volume right up. you gotta do that EQing. my headphones do a good job, thankfully. All right, send me an email, germwarfare@tntradio.live. Up next is Steve Hook. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the Battle of Ideas.